This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning. Good morning, world. Here we are in WGN Radio West to spend the hour that we do every week here on the Saturday morning show. And good to be with you. And Max, of course, will be joining us a little bit later today to talk markets. And we have a couple of other events. Well, one that's going on today, starting at 9 o'clock in Leland, Illinois. And let me talk about that for a moment, because it's auction time. For 34 years, they have been putting together a consignment auction, basically of farm equipment and farm tools. And that's at Leland, Illinois, the Lions Club there, putting all of this together. The auction starts at 9 sharp this morning. They have 6 auction rings running at the same time, so it's a very busy day. And they do have an unusual lineup of items, from a perfect white wedding carriage, including harness, a 35 Chevy truck in pieces, an Amish buggy, about 40 tractors of all kinds, an old Ottawa corn sheller, a 1940 Howe fire truck, a 1920 Maytag Range, an Oliver 77 diesel tractor, lots of late model tillage equipment, every kind of farm machinery used in the Midwest. As a matter of fact, they have over a mile of farm tractors that will be going on auction. So if you're looking for something that is really antique, or if you're looking for something that might be able to work for you on the farm now, Leland, Illinois, the Lions Club in Leland, they've been doing this, I think, for 34 years. And my thanks to Ronnie Johnson of Leland for giving us the information on this annual event. So bring your checkbook or your credit card, or you could even bring cash, because I think they take it all. Leland, Illinois, today, 9 o'clock. And they'll go probably for most of the day because of all of the equipment that they have, way over a mile of machinery. So that's on the St. Patrick's Day calendar, and of course all the St. Pat's Day parties, and then some, as you heard, basketball involving teams in the Chicago area. So there's a lot going on today. And we're going to be talking about an event, or maybe I should say a deadline, that is coming up very soon for farmers who want to help their high school get grants and funding for the STEM program. As we mentioned, STEM stands for science and technology and education and math, and so engineering rather than education. But we'll learn more about that. It's an event called Farmers Grow Rural Education. So stay with us for that and a lot more, and Max will be here to talk markets with Brian Split of Allendale. Stay with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. There is a program in existence today that I really wasn't familiar with, but wanted to learn more about it. The program, America's Farmers Grow Rural Education. And on the line with me today is Erin Glarner, who is spokesperson for the organization. She is based in St. Louis. And she's going to give us an idea of what this is all about, because there is a deadline approaching. So we'll say good morning to you, Erin, and What is the program, and explain how people apply, and again, the deadline on it. So you've got it. Give me the full report.
Okay, sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And so, yes, this is our eighth year doing the program. Actually, after a successful pilot in 2011, we officially launched the program in 2012. And since the program has started, we have given away over $14 million in grant money, and that is cumulative total, and we give away $2.3 million each year. And so how the program works, it basically starts with the farmer and ends with the farmer. So a farmer actually has to be the one to nominate a school district for the grant, and then they can submit a grant application. So the farmer nominates the district, and then once the district has been nominated, they will receive a unique code to go online and submit their grant application. So farmers have until April the 2nd to nominate a school district, and they can do that one of two ways. They can either go on our website at www.growruraleducation.com, or they can call a toll-free number, which is 1-877-267-3332. Again, they have until April 2nd to nominate a school district, and then the school district has until April 15th to submit their grant application.
And is that application a rather long, detailed application?
I mean, it is a pretty robust application, but we do have, some grant writing resources on our website for schools if they need some assistance. We have a couple of additional WebEx calls coming up that are also located on the website to help people, you know, be able to write these robust applications to be considered for the grant.
And I think I heard you mention the number $14 million. Where does that money come from?
So the money is actually given from the Monsanto Fund. They are a division of the Monsanto Company. And so they are the ones who actually provide the funds to the schools. And so we give either a $10,000 grant or $25,000 grants. And basically, the grant is based on, judged on merit, need, and community support. So I know I mentioned it takes just one nomination from a farmer for a school district to be eligible to apply. However, if a school district receives, 10 or 20 nominations, it shows that that specific district has a lot of community support.
And then there are probably some people that do not know what STEM means. So tell me about the STEM program.
Sure. So STEM is a combination of science, technology, engineering, and math. And so we have received feedback from farmers that a lot of local rural schools didn't have great resources in place to further enhance these STEM curriculums that are going on throughout the schools in the United States today. And unfortunately, we have also seen a statistic, and it's estimated that in 2018 alone, over 2.4 million STEM-related jobs will go unfilled. And that's primarily due to the fact that we don't have the resources in place to provide these robust curriculums for schools. And so that's what we're really trying to do, is provide funding so these schools have the resources available to enhance these programs in their schools. And I can give you a few examples of what some of the grant money is used for. We see laboratory equipment being updated in science labs, software being implemented, specifically CAD software or CAD computers, Chromebooks, makerspaces, or other tablets. As we know, technology is an ever-changing thing we have, resource that we have available out there, and it is constantly changing. And so in order to be able to provide these robust programs, we have to have, updated lab equipment, updated resources to help them, get to where they need to be to have these in place.
Did you have the opportunity to follow through on schools that have received these grants and the improvements that they've been able to make?
Yes. So basically, so how it works is once a, somebody has won the grant, the following year, they have to provide us some you know, report back to us. How is the project going? Is it being delayed? Have they fulfilled everything they want? So there is definitely a checks and balances in place that we do circle back with the winners just to ensure that they are able to continue to use the money that they said they were using it for. And we also want to be able to provide and highlight these success stories.
Well, I know a lot more about the program now than when we started, and I appreciate it. So as we wrap up this morning, again, how and when do people make this application, and must it come from a farmer?
Yes, it must come from a farmer. So farmers have until April the 2nd to nominate their school district. Again, one of two ways. They can either go to our website at www.growruraleducation.com, or they can call toll-free at 1-877-267-3332. And the process takes less than 5 minutes for them to submit their nomination. Once the school has been nominated, they will receive a unique code in the mail that they can go online and submit their application. The application is due by April the 15th.
All right. Well, thank you so much for educating me and maybe a lot of other people this morning joining us here on WGN Radio. A visit with Aaron Glarner, spokesperson, America's Farmers Grow Rural Education. More to come here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 25 minutes past 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And one interesting story that was shared with me on the program we just talked about, America's Farmers Grow Rural Education. The one of the winners was Rochelle Middle School in Rochelle, Illinois. And the teacher there, Vic Worthington, said that winning an America's Farmers Grow Rural Education grant gave my students a lesson that they will remember for a lifetime. Worthington's class received a $25,000 grant, and they used a portion of the funds to build a 3D printer. After learning about how Jake Hubbard, a local Illinois farmer, lost his left arm in a farming accident, Worthington and his class spent an entire school year researching, designing, and building a prosthetic arm. And in May last year, the students presented Hubbard with the new prosthetic. And quoting Worthington again, when word spread about what our students were building, we had countless people in the community and even an engineer from Ohio pitch in to make this project a reality. And as for Hubbard, the prosthetic gave him newfound mobility, including playing with and holding his young children. And he said it's pretty heartwarming that the students would do that, especially for someone that they had never met before. Again, the deadline for applying for the grants is April 2nd of 2018. And you can get more information by going to growruraleducation.com. And there you'll find the material you need to make an application for this grant. Another event this week that I want to make mention of, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's FEMA, is joining state officials in Illinois to conduct damage assessments in Iroquois, Kankakee, and Vermilion counties this week. Governor Bruce Rauner and his team at the Illinois Emergency Management Agency submitted the request for federal support after the three counties experienced severe flooding in February, and county officials conducted initial damage assessments, found that 126 homes were destroyed or suffered major damage. Another 850 homes were also impacted by floodwaters. So FEMA will be taking a look at that and maybe providing some funds to help restore the flooded areas that were so highly damaged. We're at 28 minutes after 5 o'clock, St. Patrick's Day, and We hope the weather clears up in time for all the fun that goes along with St. Patrick's Day, including dyeing green the Chicago River downtown. So enjoy St. Pat's Day, but enjoy it responsibly. Just have a good time, because that's what it's really all about. We're coming up to news time here on WGN, and then we'll talk about a victory for farmers in the courtroom this week. Doesn't happen very often, and unfortunately, farmers probably spend, well, not probably, definitely spend more time in courtrooms in order to farm and produce food, because so many people file lawsuits on treatment of animals. We have a story on that a little bit later. Or what's happening to the environment, to the air, to the water. And so they go to the courtroom, file a lawsuit against farmers and ranchers, and then we spend a lot of money fighting it. But farmers did win this week in Washington, D.C., when a federal judge said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to take another look at this. So at 5:30 here on the Saturday morning show, it's time to check again with Roger to bring us up to date on news on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. And thank you very much, Roger. We're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. Coming up, Max Armstrong in the studio with Brian Splitt, market analyst from Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. They'll talk the latest in market activity, as we're now 2 weeks away from some very important reports from USDA. Typically, this happens the end of March, and it will include the quarterly supply-demand report on the grains. It will also record and report on planting intentions, the official survey taken by USDA on how much we're going to plant this year, and will it be corn, soybeans, or something else. And in addition to that, at the end of the month, we get the quarterly pig crop report to give us an idea of how many consumers of these grains we're producing are out there and making their way to market, and pork chops and ham and all the other good food that comes from the farms of America. But right now, it's time for Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, the makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion Samuelson, and delighted to report this week on a victory for farmers in the courtroom. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color fast fabrics, and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 69 years, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. Over the years, over the decades, farmers have spent a lot of time in the courtroom, very often fighting for their right to farm, for their right to do what they want to do with their property. And not too often is there a victory for farmers in the courtroom. But I'm delighted to report that last week there indeed was a victory when a federal judge in Washington, D.C. ruled that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers bears responsibility for causing recurrent flooding and damaging farms and property in four Midwest states along the Missouri River, Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas. And the ruling stated the government must compensate farmers, landowners, and business owners for the flood damage, which has been estimated to exceed $300 million. Now, this mass action lawsuit was originally filed in March of 2014 and alleged the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' actions violated the Takings Clause of the Fifth Amendment that bars the government from taking private property without just compensation. That's been in the courtroom many times over the decades. But Judge Nancy Firestone with the U.S. Court of Federal Claims found in favor of the plaintiffs in 5 of the 6 years that the flooding was claimed, dating back to 2007, disallowing the flood claims in 2011. And Judge Firestone stated in her trial opinion that the evidence established the core changes in the river had the effect of raising the Missouri River's water surface elevations in periods of high flows. And she found that since 2007, the flooding has been among the worst in the history of the river, and the Army Corps changes in the management of the river caused or contributed to the flooding. Citing the testimony of plaintiffs' experts, the court acknowledged that recurrent flooding in the Missouri River Basin will continue into the future, and that increased block drainage of farmlands due to higher river levels is a problem. I certainly agree with that decision and hope it will continue to be seen many more times in the courtroom. That's Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks.
With us this weekend from Allendale Incorporated, Brian Splitt. It's good to see you again, sir. It's been a few months.
It's great to be back, Max. Thank you.
You folks at Allendale got a little attention this past week when you came out with the results of your producer survey, and that was on acreage intentions. We get the official USDA numbers here in a few days. But USDA has been assuming and giving us the guidance that it would be 90 million acres of corn, 90 million acres of soybeans. Your survey of farmers seemed to follow some of the chatter we've been hearing from other firms that that's not going to be quite the case, that producers will probably favor soybeans because the economics will guide them that way.
That's right. The numbers that Allendale got from talking to our own clients, and we do this every year prior to the March planting intention report the USDA releases, that implies 92.1 million acres of soybeans and 88.5 million acres of corn. So it was of note that that number was released at 10 a.m. on March 14th, and then as that number was released, the traders did take the soybeans sharply lower that day. And when you look at the long-term implications of the possibility of 92 million acres on the 18-19 carryout, it is a little bit scary.
Growers who are running the numbers, despite their ability in many instances to get still some very good corn yields, are looking at the prospects of, again, good bean yields, and the numbers, when they look at the cost of production, just favor soybeans, right?
Well, there's several different factors that would cause a producer to lean towards soybeans, and you're right. When you look at the given profitability right here, right now, at current new crop soybean levels, that would draw acres towards soybeans. As you had mentioned, the cost of planting the crop is lower. So depending on a producer's cash flow, that would tend to lead a producer towards heavier soybean acres. And right now, we have seen leaps and bounds in bean yields. And so if we can have a larger bean crop and have some extra bushels of soybeans, that'll help out as well.
Some people are wondering if that is sustainable, if those bean yield gains that we have seen can just keep on climbing. What's your view of that from the folks that you visited with, Brian?
Well, I do think that the genetics that have been placed into seeds have grown leaps and bounds, and so that's being shown in yield right now. And we don't know if this is the year where we have a weather disturbance or not, but it does seem like these multi-trait stacks have done a very good job of providing both larger yields for both corn and soybeans. So I do think that the trend in yields for both crops is going to continue to go higher.
And that would favor some improvement in the corn balance sheet, would it not?
Well, we'll see what happens. You know, if we do have 88.5 million acres of corn, you know, and you just plug in trendline yields, on a world basis, we are seeing the world stocks and the world stocks to use decline. So right now, this is the lowest stocks to use we've seen in about 4 years, on a world basis. And I think that's what's going to keep the funds interested in looking at new crop corn on owning it on dips.
What if this sends a signal to the growers to the extent that they then make a correction? Do you think there's a possibility that we could see enough of a downward trend in the soybean market here? Let's say USDA in a few days also comes out with an estimate that indicates more soybean acreage. Would farmers respond to that and then ultimately maybe put in 90 and 90?
I don't doubt that. I think the situation continues to remain liquid. A lot of this may depend on our planting conditions. And, you know, as we get into the field, if the weather is conducive to planting, I think the producer will continue to roll with some corn, especially like you had mentioned, if the price of soybeans does drop in the meantime. And I don't think it's very difficult for a producer that might have some soybeans protected on the board to switch that, take some profit from that position, and utilize some of that, all those gains and apply them to corn prices and just plant corn at that point.
So much is said about how farmers like to plant corn. We're good at it. We like to grow corn here in the heart of the Corn Belt, especially across the three I states. Yet the economics have to be powerful, and the bankers, I'm sure, are weighing in a little bit, are they not, Brian?
They are. I think this is probably a year in recent history we've seen the most banker input in decisions for planting. And so, you know, things have been tight, and the farm economy has been more delicate over the last couple of years than the previous, you know, 5 to 6. And so I do think that, you know, if any of those switches are going to be made, it's going to have to be made in conjunction with the baker being on board with those ideas.
With the Trump administration turning up the screws on trade and especially on the Chinese, how worried are you analysts and traders about what could happen here?
Well, we're getting mixed signals. You know, China had mentioned to the American Soybean Association that soybeans could be something that they would use as a retaliatory effort versus our imposed tariffs. But at the same time, the Chinese Commerce Minister said that a trade dispute or a trade war would be devastating not only to them but really to the whole world. So the thing with when we trade futures and future prices is it is a perception versus reality. And so China could maybe just hold off on buying U.S. soybeans for a little while. That almost changes the way that the pace of buying looks to make it look like it's running behind what it needs to be, which can lower prices, thereby offering an opportunity for them to buy soybeans at a much lower level down the road.
They are shrewd traders.
They are. They've been doing this for a very long time, and they're very good at it. So
they've been known to try to impact the market and then, as you point out, come in and buy as needed.
And I do think that soybeans being a crop where the balance sheet is just – it's to the point where, you know, a 50 million bushel swing or 100 million bushel swing at current levels represents a very large percentage of our overall expected carryout. So I don't think if we had a good size setback in the new crop soybean market, I think they'll use that as an opportunity regardless of, you know, potential carryout projections prior to our growing season, because there's just a lot of risk of weather coming in here during the summer and disrupting that projected carryout. So they'll take a stand at some lower levels. And I would assume that, you know, maybe if we get a pullback through spring planting, and I think the fund position is very vulnerable going into the end of the quarter. So it's going to be very difficult to maintain a fund long position this size all the way into the summer growing season. And I think that'll give buyers an opportunity at lower levels.
As we get ready to move into our spring season and they move into fall officially in the southern hemisphere, what's the update on the status of their Safrinha corn planting down there that they need to get done in order to grow the corn crop that the world is assuming they'll produce?
Well, from a soybean harvest perspective in Brazil and also thereby the Safrinha corn crop planting perspective, both are running a little bit behind last year's pace, but we are running right at about the five-year average. So while it's a little bit slower than last year, which was, you know, running, you know, at very strong levels, I don't know that it's at a pace right now that would really cause any major concern, at least to me.
The clock is probably suggesting it's getting late, is it not, for that second corn crop to go in the ground?
Well,
the calendar?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to get in here pretty quickly here, and we know, and we've seen this domestically, once we get in the field and start planting, the crop does get in very quickly. So I think as long as we're maintaining a pretty close proximity to five-year average for planting, they'll get the crop in there in time, and it'll be just fine.
That drought monitor map still shows some troubling areas of dryness, most of those outside of the basic corn belt, yet there are those edges. To what extent is the trade interested in that at the moment?
Well, it seems like right now the most importance for the concern where we're seeing that drought is going to be on the hard red wheat growing areas. And that's really had a very strong rally over the last several weeks. But, you know, this week we saw extremely poor export sales. And it does seem that the futures prices rallying to these current levels have slowed things down a little bit on that front. So, you know, the wheat crop is something where I don't know that I've really ever seen a wheat crop killed by a drought in March, but I've seen plenty of wheat crops made with some good rains in April. So we'll be intently watching further forecasts for rain or lack thereof over the next several weeks.
It is remarkable to see around Easter what a well-placed, significant rain can do to finish up that crop, isn't it?
That's correct. You know, and I've seen, you know, several market participants suggest that, you know, wheat is a weed, and you could spit on it and it'll grow. And so if we do get a good, well-timed rain, like you'd mentioned, I think this crop could do substantially better than what's priced into the market right now.
Brian, tell all of your colleagues at Allendale we said hello. It's nice to have you with us again.
Will do. Thank you, Max.
Brian Splitz, Allendale Incorporated.
It is 4 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio. And throughout the year, I talk frequently about scholarship money that is available for college students. And Mom and Dad, I'll bet you have sticker shock when you take a look at the cost of a college education today. But now here's another program that can help cover those costs. The Illinois Farm Bureau is accepting applications for its Illinois Veterinary Education and Training Loan Program. Loans are available to students attending any accredited college of veterinary medicine in the United States. And the program loans up to $40,000 to as many as 3 veterinary students each year. Loans are made over a period of 2 to 3 years. And again, applications are due on the 1st of May. And you can find them at www.ilfb.org/IVET. And that's at Bloomington, Illinois. And successful applications will be notified by mail. But student loans for those students who want to go into veterinary medicine, and one of the reasons is we're losing veterinarians for livestock folks in the country to retirement age and that sort of thing. And I keep hearing from farmers and ranchers who say, what am I going to do for veterinary service because my vet is retiring? So here's applications available for fund money to help students studying veterinary medicine and wanting to get into that. As we wound down the week yesterday, let me quickly run down the prices at the close of the trading session on yesterday's trade. The March wheat, or the July wheat contract ended the day down 10.5 cents at $4.85 a bushel. And the July corn contract ended down 3.75 cents at $3.91 a bushel. While July soybeans ended the day with a gain of 7.5 cents at $10.60 a bushel. And then as we take a look at the livestock trade, again, it was a mixed market as they reacted to what's happening, and particularly in the cattle trade. That market has been on a roller coaster ride for quite a while now. So anyway, we hope you enjoy St. Patrick's Day and do it responsibly and safely. And we'll be back with you a week from today on the Saturday morning show. Special thanks to Bob Ferguson for twirling the dials to make all of this happen. And thanks to you for joining us on the Saturday morning show. And it's all coming to you from Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.